So, so basically I'll review a few points of the paper of Lin, Lewin, and Malacena, which I refer to as LLM. So they study, among other things, type 2B supervariety solutions, which are half BPS, asymptotically ADS5 plus S5, and also there's another part which deals with PP waves, and preserving O4 plus O4 symmetry. So they found all such solutions which are regular, and all solutions are completely characterized by a single function on a plane. So they call it Z, but I would call half minus Z as U. So here are the solutions. So I don't want you to, expect you to remember everything on this page, but I just wanted to show that the the metric coefficients all depend on this function U, and this V1 and V2, I runs over 1 and 2. So there, so it's U and V1 and V2, and V1 and V2 also will be determined by U, the value of U on a single plane. So the coordinates are as follows. So the two spheres, which in the special case of the ABS5 plus S5 geometry, are part of ABS5 and S5, they remain as they are because of the O4 plus O4 symmetry. The other coordinates are called T, X1, X2, and Y. This T is the same T as in the case of the global coordinates in ABS5 plus 5. And that's it. I'll tell you the coordinate transformation to global coordinates in a while. Right. And the, this is the Ramon-Ramon field. And that also is determined by U of X1, X2, and Y. So, see, the, because of the O4 plus O4 symmetry, of course, things cannot depend on the angles omega 3 and omega 3 tilde. It also turns out that the half BP solutions are all time independent, so they don't depend on time as well, so they can only depend on the other three coordinates, that's X1, X2, and Y. Now, I will show that the Y dependence also is completely completely determined by the value of U on the Y equals 0 plane. So that's how it goes. So you can see that it's given by some integral equation. I mean, it's some differential equation. It's the solution for E. So U, X1, X2, Y satisfy the differential equation, which comes out of the BPS conditions. And the result is that it's given by the data on the Y of 0 plane. And V1 and V2 are also determined by the same data. Okay, and so the first observation is that to avoid possible singularities at y equals 0, I'll explain in a moment, we need this data to satisfy the following condition. The value of the function u, x1, x2, 0 has to be either 0 or 1. How does it come about? So let me say very quickly, sort of in a hand-waving way. So this is how it happens. Look at the metric coefficients. For example, this one, the radius of the S3, which is part of the radius of this S3, And suppose that u is not 0 or 1, in which case this is some finite thing, and as y goes to 0, well, suppose that at y equals 0, u is not 0 or 1, there is some finite thing, then y goes to 0, and this goes to 0. And same here. Okay, so both the spheres shrink to 0 size, and you expect that there are possible singularities here, and indeed it does happen to singularities in those places. Okay, so the way to avoid such things is that if u, for example, goes to 0, then you have a 0 by 0 situation, so you can have a finite thing there, in which case it will turn out that this stuff goes at y, so this is y squared, d omega chain squared, and it picks up this dy squared there and makes a smooth R4, and this is how singularities are avoided. Okay, so the first thing is that the data ux1, x2, 0 has to be either 0 or 1. That already gives us a rather rich picture. So that is the following. So the function u is specified then by filled regions and unfilled regions on the plane x1, x2. So the filled regions I will draw as shaded and unfilled regions as white. So a special configuration is in which a filled region is a circle of a certain radius, which if you choose to be R radius squared, then the geometry, if you put that value of u x1, x2 into the metric and the Ramon-Ramon field, that geometry turns out to be that radius 5 versus 5. And there are various other kinds of deformations, small and large, which you can consider, of course. So, for example, you can have small deformations of this geometry, in which you put a small number of balls inside, or you put some number of filled regions outside. Okay. So, the LLM correspondence of these geometries is to giant fractals, the holes differs from giant fractals and filled regions outside, well, giant fractals. So, of course, you can also have large deformations, or you can have ripples of this kind, which you're familiar with from C equals 1 physics. They would correspond to, according to LLM, they correspond to gravitons. Okay, so a quick recap of the relation to global coordinates. So, as I said, that if you choose the configuration u to be, excuse me, there's a comma missing here. Configuration u to be such that it is it's filled only in a circle of inside a circle of radius r naught, taken to be r squared. Then this geometry corresponds to the global radius, to the radius 5 plus x5 geometry, and the relation between the LLM coordinates and the global coordinates in that case is given by such. So the time is the same, but the coordinates y, x1, and x2, so I have used r and phi as the polar coordinates for x1 and x2, they have to be, they're related to the global coordinates as such. So, you know, essentially, this looks a little like a complicated relation, but if you take the linear combinations r plus I y on the LLM side and theta plus I y, on the Logan coordinate side, then it's just a sign. Okay, good. And interestingly, there is also another thing here, is that the angular coordinate phi in the x1, x2 plane is related to this angle of S5, okay, by a translation here. So we'll see later that this shift is such that the giant radicals, which are actually moving with unit speed, okay, they become static in this phi coordinate. So there's something like a moving coordinate. Okay, good. So and the so that was the condition on values of u, x1, x2, 0 on a plane. There is also a condition on the integral of u, x1, x2 on that plane. So let's consider the example of the unperturbed ADS5 plus S5. Okay. I said that that's equal by that. So let us simply calculate the area of this blob. Okay. So that's the integral of u, because u equals 1 specifies the filled regions. So the area of the blob is the same as the integral of u. So that's given by pi r naught squared plus pi r plus the power 4. So therefore, the total area, okay, turns out to be proportional to n, and the area divided by n, okay, if you identify that with 2 pi h bar, okay, well, you define this object as 2 pi h bar, then if you define this object as 2 pi h bar, then you have h bar equals 2 pi lp to the power 4, okay? And then there is a nice, you can write this area constraint, okay, as a nice integral relation, which is in which the measure appears as dx1, dx2 divided by 2 pi h bar, okay? Exactly the same relation as in a phase space with the value of h bar given by that. And the total area in terms of the 2 pi h bar is n. So, and this, of course, I have shown only for the unperturbed ADS5 plus S5 solution, but it is true of all LLM solutions because of some relation between the Lamont-Lamont fluxes and the area, as you can easily see. Well, in any case, it's all explained nicely in the paper. So this constraint is satisfied by all the supposedly previous five solutions. All right. So let me also talk a little bit about the boundary side of the story. So that is the Hartwig disk space of n equals 4, SuperML's theory, on S3 plus R. So these operators, so they are described by, so the physical operators, the invariant operators of the theory, are given by products of traces of powers of this singly complex scalar combination, which is phi 1 plus I phi 2. Okay, so these are the ones which would correspond to O4 plus O4 symmetry, and also the delta equals J constraint. And furthermore, the only the lowest Kaluza-Klein mode of Z on S3 is relevant. So Z, instead of being a function of S3 and T, it becomes a function of T alone. So this mode has a harmonic oscillator potential, turns out, because of the conformal coupling to the curvature of S2, and then, S3, and then the system becomes, okay, so you see now that there's a single matrix, okay, complex matrix, which is a function of t. Okay, so it becomes a matrix quantum mechanics in a harmonic oscillator potential. Of course, it's matrix quantum mechanics. This is a complex matrix. Okay, and so it has been indicated in the paper by Bernstein and also Bernstein has sort of convinced me privately that the complex matrix is a degree of freedom. Is equivalent to a Hermitian matrix degree of freedom. Essentially, if you write down the polynomials, okay, which are the wave functions of that complex matrix model, then what you get is some thing like a Bayesian representation of harmonic functions. Well, that's I can try to reproduce the argument. So essentially, so it, you take it as granted for the moment that it corresponds to a single Hermitian matrix degree of freedom, in which case the gauge invariant states of the system are described by n free polynomials subject to a single quantity Hermitian, which is given by t squared plus u squared. This comes from the simple harmonic oscillator potential, which the set of the fields. Okay, so and so this is simple harmonic oscillator potential given by a value of h bar, and that this h bar actually turns out to be the same if you go to the analysis, the same as the one that we found a few cases before in the integral constraint of the element. And so we know that this system is described by, in the semi-classical limit, in the h bar of the 0 limit, this system is described by an incompressible fluid, Fermi fluid in the phase space, okay, in which the Fermi fluid is described by a phase space density. Which is either 0 or 1, and the integral of the phase space density in the 2 pi h bar units is given by n. Okay, so I'll describe this perhaps if I have time in more detail, how the free polynomial description gives rise to this one. Okay, and so in fact, the accurate description of this phase space density in terms of something which is called the Wigner phase space distribution. And so it's defined in terms of the second quantized Fermi field as such. Okay. And essentially, the semi classical limit is taken by, is obtained by taking the expectation value of this guy, okay, in appropriate wave functions. Okay. So much for the review. So you, of course, you have already noticed that the bulk theory and the boundary theory, okay, would agree if you identify the u of x1, x2 of supergravity. Okay, it suggests this identification that u of x1, x2 should be identified with the phase space density u of pq. Okay, so the first question is, how does the x1, x2 plane, okay, transform into a phase space p of q? After all, x1 and x2 are just two coordinates of supergravity. Okay, they are the two coordinates of space-time. Okay, how does it become like that? A related question is that the u of pq, okay, which is, so from the point of view of the boundary theory, u of pq is the phase space density. Okay. So not all functions u of pq are given allowed. Okay. For example, a function like this is not allowed, because this would be inconsistent with the uncertain principle. Okay, but if you identify u of pq with u of x1, x2, u and x are, u of x on x2 is just a supergravity mode. So how is it that supergravity mode, I mean, you know, not all supergravity modes are allowed. So therefore, I mean, just like it's true of coordinates, true of the coordinates are becoming like the phase space coordinates. Similarly, the supergravity modes are also getting split up into coordinates of momenta. And therefore, there is a, I mean, it's not just a non-commutativity in the coordinates space, a kinematic non this thing, but also non-commutativity in the supergravity configuration space. And another question, of course, which immediately arises is, what is that? If we somehow manage to show anyway that such a non-commutative theory arises, what is that non-commutative theory? In particular, can one actually arrive at the non-commutative description of the fermion theory starting from the supergravity theory? So these are the questions that we will address in this talk. So the plan of the talk is, I will first describe the first principles approach to collective coordinate quantum condition of half-pitched supergravity. So half-pitched supergravity in this context is given by one single function. Okay. So I will take that function as collective coordinate. Okay. And see whether I can do a standard collective coordinate quantization of half-pitched supergravity using that parameter. Okay. So then I will I'll describe sort of two approaches to that. I'll come back. So then this approach will lead me to consider a certain parameterization of the collective coordinate u in terms of D3 brains in arbitrary LLM geometries, okay, and the half-pitched dynamics of such D3 brains, which in simple cases would correspond to giant phantoms coupled to ADS 5 plus S 5 geometries. And by collecting the various examples of D3 brains in arbitrary LLM geometries, we will be able to reconstruct some collective coordinate action of the u variable, okay, from these little actions in each case, okay, and well, action as well as measure. We will arrive at some such things, and then we will show that this collective coordinate action and measure actually are the h bar going to zero limit of some known functional integral, which in fact is equivalent to free fermions in a simple harmonic oscillator potential. Okay. So there is a sort of lot of literature on converting a fermion functional, free fermion functional integral into functional integral written in terms of Ringer phase space distributions. Okay. So I don't know if I have time to tell you how such things are derived, but I'll certainly try to state the result as precisely as possible. So that object, this right hand side, written in terms of UPQ, okay, is the functional integral in terms of Ringer phase space distributions, which is exactly equivalent to free fermion theory, okay, with arbitrary value of h bar. And what you arrive at from this collective coordinate picture is the left hand side, which will turn out to be b the 85.0 limit is turned out to be the semi-classical limit of this thing. So both the action and the measure will turn out to be the semi-classical limit of that. Okay, so that's the sort of main result. Besides, of course, also showing that indeed a supergravity mode can become appropriately non-commutative under the BPS condition. And interesting, so I'll describe as far as possible some interesting open questions, some related to H bar is finite. And we'll see that the collective motion, okay, in the LLM picture, the collective motion is given by the area preserving diffeomorphism group, which is called W small W infinity. On the other hand, in the Fermion picture, the relevant group is actually capital W infinity, which is the quantum, which is a sort of quantum version of this one. And it's so, you know, the difference between these two groups is very important. And in order to see their correspondence fully, one should understand the difference between these notions. In particular, under the area preserving diffeomorphisms, it appears unlikely that one can represent Droplet splitting. On the other hand, this one, of course, the Droplets become fuzzy, and Droplet splitting is easy. Of course, in the last week, there was a paper by Rava in which he claims to describe Droplet splitting even within the classical framework. So, but I have not yet read the paper carefully enough to see how he does it. I mentioned all that. So just one point I should mention here is that this little W infinity, which corresponds to area preserving diffeomorphism, for the C equals 1, this describes the two-dimensional string theory tachyon very easily. Okay, because this is the semi-classical thing. But the real fermion theory, of course, for a long time we knew that it has much more, and in fact that much more stuff in concrete, a concrete realization of much more happened after 10 years of the initial beginning of C equals 1 in terms of non-stable B0 brains. So it would be interesting what all this difference in the present case can mean for us. Okay, this was mainly the given plan, but if there's any question, I can. So let us describe collective coordinate formulation of half BPS spaghetti. So, as I said, the space of classical solutions is coordinatized by the function U, okay, at y equal to 0 plane, and the which I will call u x1 x2. So it obeys the two constraints, which are u square equals u. Okay, that's the same. If this is another way of writing u equals 0 or 1. Okay, that's the same statement. U square equal to u, and this integral constraint. Okay, so the So just to anticipate, this condition in the Fermion theory will change to u star u equals u. But right now we have u square equals u, which comes from the condition of regularity of the geometries. So it is clear that the space of solutions is preserved by the group of area preserving diffeomorphisms, because namely, these two constraints are both preserved by the area preserving diffeomorphisms. How does it happen? The area preserving diffeomorphism in two dimensions is the same as canonical transformations. So the group S div, okay, this is also the group corresponding to let me call that. So this is usually a name reserved for the Lie algebra, but let me also call that a group. So the group of canonical transformations acts on points on the plane x1, x2 just by canonical transformation, so that the symmetric form is preserved and therefore area is preserved. There is no difference between canonical transformations and area preserving things here. And it acts on U very simply as such. So U of x1, x2 becomes U of x1 prime, x2 prime. And let us call that the transformed U of x1, x2. So this is how the transformation happens. And clearly, you can show that the square constraint, the quadratic constraint, U equals U, is satisfied. And of course, the integral constraint is also satisfied, because you can shift this action G onto this thing, and the x1, the x2 is preserved. So it acts on that, and then you can go back to the old literature on how collective motions are analyzed in field theories. So what happens is that in the normal discussion of collective coordinates, like kinks or monopoles and so on, you have certain group motion, and this is called the collective motion. And you split the degrees of freedom of a field. Okay, so let me call here phi as a collection of spherality fields. Okay. So the classical solution, the relevant classical solutions here, are some things which are given entirely by this function u. So when u has a motion, okay, clearly phi of u also has a motion. So part of the degrees of freedom of the field, okay, is that degree of freedom, okay, and what is done is to split the total, the entire collection of all degrees of freedom of this supergravity or any field theory into this motion, okay. And so the dynamics is split into a collective motion and something which is over and above the collective motion, which satisfies some sort of orthogonality condition to this collective motion. So then one basically splits the total functional integral into some collective part and orthogonal part, which I have to write here. There's a part which depends on part tilde. Okay, all that is fine. And so one thing that is that's quite clear, and you can look at the type of reaction and plug this formula in, you'll easily see that the action for the G of t here, okay, G is that group element, okay, is given by second order prime derivative. Okay, so that's G dot squared. Okay, so this already goes against what we arrive at, because what we're looking for, of course, is some sort of a phase structure. Okay. In this G degree of freedom or in the U degree of freedom. Okay, so G dot squared is no good. Yeah.
What's T here? Is just some parameter?
It's some parameter. Yeah.
Is there a claim that you cover all those spaces by actions or
No, actually not. So that's a very important question. In fact, for example, the droplet splitting. Okay. Will not be described by this G of t, because this is a smooth thing. Okay, but this construction is easier to explain in the case of the fermion theory, for the native form. Okay. So, but of course, this is not the complete story yet, because we have not imposed the BPS condition. And, And it's not clear, okay, how to do this splitting, okay, in the VPS emission in general. Okay, and in fact, I have looked at the literature of collected bodies quite a bit, and there is, you know, there is no clear description of how to define the initial functional integral in terms of the in the presence of the VPS constraint. Okay, so there's a possibility that there are some mentions in the literature how this can possibly be done in terms of some index. So you have an insertion of operators related to, you know, such minus 1 to the power f. Okay, but it's not, okay, at the moment it's not clear to me. I'll be happy to discuss this thing. So as a result, let us for the moment take a bit of a different approach. We'll come back to this W infinity discussion in a while. So let's take a different approach for the moment. So instead of thinking of U as being generated by a group action from a reference action, you can also parameterize the space of U's in terms of arbitrary fillings of cells on a plane. Okay. So, for example, if you have a small number of holes, and you can, for example, this tessellate the entire x1, x2 plane in terms of filled and unfilled regions. Okay, and you can parameterize them in terms of arbitrary number of holes inside, let's say, the reference configuration, which was the upper term, the S5 or S5, and arbitrary number of filled regions outside. Okay. And of course, when you have a large number of them, you have deformed the initial geometry itself significantly, so that you have to take care of. So with sufficient number of partition holes, we can describe all U configurations. Of course, here, if you really have very small cells like this, okay, then the supergravity solutions themselves will have high curvature. So that problem we will for the moment ignore. So we assume that all U configurations are, so first of all U configurations which satisfy the two constraints, U squared equal to U, and the integral of U equals N, can clearly be described by these configurations. And, so that is the parameterization of the space of U's in terms of cells which are filled or unfilled. Now, we will identify what these configurations mean, okay, according to the LLM description. So a single cell whose center is some given point x1, 0, x2, 0, okay, describes a giant diatom. If it's a single hole, let's say, inside the unperturbed it is 5 plus 5, then it's a giant diatom. It's a single unfilled cell inside, it describes unperturbed, it is 5 plus 5, then it describes a dual giant diatom. And generally, okay, we can consider any additional filled cell to be at D3 plane coupled to the geometry which is created by the rest of the U configuration. Okay, and if it is we'll see that the natural wrapping of that sort of the D3 plane, okay, is onto the S3, what I call S3, and the natural wrapping of a D3 plane like this is onto what I have called the S3 tilde. Okay, exactly, yes.
I thought this identification was exact only with the use of large parts of the room and small parts.
Okay, so Oh, sorry. I mean, no, there is one comment that I was going to make right now is that you know, the separation between these cells, it should be more than you know, the orders of aircraft for the supergravity to have good behavior.
For example, if you take one with the ground and bring them very close to the ground surface,
right,
seems to adjust by the single degree of the sort of.
Okay, so then, okay, so what LLM say is, let me just quote that. So I can say also what I have to say about that. So what LLM say is that the when the cell comes to distances which are closer than square root of h bar, okay, then they should rather be described in terms of ripples, okay, or which should be identified in a more easily with gametons. Okay. And so that's of course in a very interesting thing. In which case, so what I find is that the instead of when these cells actually come very close, okay, then there is a parameterization. I understand that will be within my paper. I don't know, I'll have time to say it here. Okay, in terms of little wiggles on the unbroken profile, which are sort of, I mean, okay, let me just so you have the like that. So when some cell comes very close, okay, let's say somewhere here, let me draw them very even smaller. Like this, then a better description for such a thing when it comes very, very close indeed, okay, is in terms of a small blip like this. Okay? And in order to have the area constraint, of course, if you have a blip like this, you have to have some sort of other little dip in here and so on. So this story is exactly the same as in the C+1 case, okay, in which you describe the new configuration in terms of such wiggles. And so for example, there is this, if you just mimic what happened in C+1, is that you can say that the unperturbed profile is given in terms of some square root square minus x square, and the new one, okay, is okay. That's way too far, perhaps. Anyway, so there is a way of parameterizing these profiles, which are called the quadratic profile approximation, which gives rise to that was initiated by Kozinski. And that can lead to bosonization, approximate bosonization of the fermions, and so on. So it would be very interesting indeed to identify that approximate that boson with gravitons, just like that boson could be identified with the C+1 tech. Okay. But I have not been able to do that yet. But indeed, I am very much interested in that problem and trying to work that out. Okay, so right. Okay, so with all that thing, so so essentially, of course, you know, one in the D3 wave configurations should not really be thought of as exhausting this cellular this timing, okay, but it's only an approximate concept. Right. So this event, this is just so this is what we have. Okay. So the strategy for finding the collective coordinate action will be as follows. Consider a cell say, either a pole, in which case you put a minus sign here, or a filled region, in which case you put a plus sign here. So a pole or a filled region, in addition to in the geometry described by U naught, okay, and and then we have already said what the interpretation of such thing is. So that's the V3 vein. And you look at the BPS V3 vein, which corresponds to that little cell, which is delta U. Okay. And that one is, so what we try to do is to find the, you know, Dirac Kornfeld plus Chern Simons action of that V3 vein, okay, and put in the BPS condition. And now you try to see if there exists an action, okay, of U which satisfies this condition. Okay. So some action S of U, I would say, is the correct action if it satisfies the following. S of U naught plus minus delta U, you take that action, subtract the U naught configuration, then what you should get is exactly the action of that V3 vein, of that specific kind of V3 vein subject to the BPS condition. Okay. And this should happen for all delta choices of delta U and U naught. Okay. This is my condition. And since I have talked this far, obviously I'll find it. So let's take the simplest example of U0 and delta U. U0 is the unperturbed radius 9.65 with the radius appropriately changed, increase the width in order to incorporate the pole inside so that the total integral is in N. So this corresponds to Jan Graviton in 85.5, which is embedded as in the standard way and it's R embedded. Okay. So this is in the static gauge. So the it's wrapped on the omega tilde, which is the x3 of the S5. Okay, and the dynamics is given by the remaining two angles of the S5, that's theta and phi tilde. And if you and it's sitting at the center of the area size, so that's equal to 0. And if you go back to the element coordinates, this dynamics means that so first of all it means that y is equal to 0. If you go to that coordinate operation, you can see that. See that if rho is equal to 0, okay, y is equal to 0, so it was nicely in the y equals 0 plane, which is where stuff should happen. And the dynamics is basically given by r of tau and phi of tau, or r of t and phi of t. And R is given by the cosine of this theta. Okay, good. So this system, the BPS condition for this system, okay, has been analyzed by this day, the last Jerich and Marco. And so first of all, you know, the action is easy to write down. But what these people do is to, first of all, you know, find out what the BPS connections are. So that's easy to find out too. Okay, by looking at the compatibility of the killing spinner of ADS5 versus 5 with the Kappa symmetry gauge fixing. And so that turns out to be these conditions. Okay. 5 of plus minus 1 in my convention here, and theta of 0. Okay. And you can write down this thing in terms of the canonical momenta. So that becomes p theta equals 0 and p phi theta equals sine square theta. Okay. This condition is equivalent to, in fact, h plus minus p phi tilde in our notation. So the interesting thing that they do is that they impose the BPS constraints as Dirac constraints on the phase space. Okay. So I'll not go through the detail right now, but I'll tell you the result. So what happens is that the four-dimensional phase space, okay, gets reduced to a two-dimensional phase space because of the two constraints that are there in the system. The reduced phase space can be coordinatized by theta and phi tilde, which have a Dirac bracket, which is this. That, of course, is equivalent to, so this is equivalent to saying that sine squared theta and phi theta, Dirac bracket equals 1 over n. And remember, this was this was found out by the BPS constraints to be the field phi theta. So the Dirac bracket is consistent with that equation, certainly as it should be. Okay? And so in the LNM coordinates, this translates to the following canonically conjugate coordinates. So we see that this is, so if you think of the BPS constraints, okay, as Dirac constraints of the theory, okay, and do this sort of manipulation, then you can get unconstrained, you can get an unconstrained coordinate space, okay. I mean, you can solve for the constraints, so the four-dimensional phase space becomes a two-dimensional phase space, and that is entirely, in fact, a coordinate space. So the coordinate space becomes a phase space under BPS condition. So this is, in the first simple example, that's how it happens. So in terms of path integrals, let's write in terms of path integrals. So they, probably this is a little easier to understand. So we begin with the coordinate space path integral, okay, in which, of course, you know, this has theta dot square, phi dot square, etc. at low velocities. And this can be written in terms of a phase space function integral, which is this. The phase space function integral, of course, is always first order in time. Okay. And then, under BPS conditions, essentially what happens is that the d theta becomes 0. I mean, this is not a rigorous way of saying it. What you have to do is really to do the Fabi-Popov method for imposing the Dirac constraints and so on. But, you know, a simple way of saying this, perhaps remember it, is that d theta should be put equal to 0 and d phi tilde should be put equal to minus sine square theta, and you get this thing. And clearly, so this is the whole functional integral today. Okay. It's written in terms of you know, sine square theta and phi. Okay, so this was a phase space functional integral, remember? But this became that under the imposition of the BPS constraint. Okay, and this is of course first order. Okay. So we'll see now that how to do this stuff in case of the arbitrary case. But before that, let us go back to the initial discussion of the collective motion. So we found just now that the BTS condition reduces the action to first order. Okay. So therefore, the collective coordinate action in terms of the group variable S of G should be first order in time. Once you say that, okay, there is actually a natural, rather canonically candidate for such an action. Okay. That is called the Kirillov Kwajandorovic action. And you can, once again go back to the sequence one literature, in which of course the Hamiltonian that was used was different, but that it doesn't matter at all. The Hamiltonian could be anything, okay. And the action in terms of the group variable G is given in terms of a first order action, which is obtained in a particular way. I'm just it will take time. To explain this,
Excuse me, how am I doing with time?
Can I take that for 10 minutes? Okay, thanks. So, right, and you can, crank out with that Kirillov machinery and find out an action in terms of the G variable, okay, a first order action in terms of the G variable, and by using the relation between G and U. So the picture, remember, was that there was a set of U's, okay, I'm not claiming that's all U's, but there's a set of U's which could be generated by the group motion from a reference U naught. Okay, so G and U were related in that way. Once you are given a particular reference motion U naught. Okay, if all U's cannot be reached by one U naught, okay, then you also have to sum one U naught. Okay. So let us keep that question aside for the moment, but. A G action, therefore, an action in terms of an action like that, like this, in terms of G, can be rewritten in terms of U using the relation between U and G, and this is what it looks like. Okay. Yes.
So this method is to find out what the
form. Yes, indeed.
And in particular, you need to take it. You just
put
it by hand
No. You actually can. So the point is that you mean from the you're right. So that of course has to be determined now by comparison with the literal dimensions.
Sure.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. So the Kirillov method, of course, has h bar as a parameter, okay, and this h bar indeed is that parameter there. So that's right. So it so therefore that's exactly right. So what I have here, so the Kirillov method tells you that the action in terms of the U, okay, the first order action in terms of the U is given by this. Okay. This involves writing the action not just a key integral, but the kinetic term, okay, the time derivative term, has to be written in terms of a cap, okay, which needs an extra variable S. Okay. And the Poisson bracket in terms of these guys, and the quantum version of that as has been just pointed out. Okay, so this action actually of course has h bar as a parameter, but we will now check if this action indeed reproduces the Dirichlet actions. In all cases, if you don't have a candidate in mind, of course you can't combine the Dirichlet reactions in various, or maybe one could even invent this one. But so let us go back to the, and we will see that the Dirichlet action fixes this h bar for me here, okay, and it is with this value of the h bar that it agrees with the functional integral of the fermions.
All right, good. So let me go over the rest of it quickly. So this is what the so let me take an arbitrary V3 band. This is a pole. Okay. And so for a hole, the situation is like this. So let us look at the metric and the Ramanujan field near the y equals 0 plane. Okay, so let us expand everything in powers of y. So then the Reyes formula become very, very simple indeed. So the metric, okay, so this function f, okay, can be explicitly written down, but it's, you know, it's sort of formula written in terms of the integrals, you know, eliminate, but there is such a form. The u naught for arbitrary configuration is given by such things, which says that the metric coefficients are so-so. And then there is a Ramanujan field. I just want to say that you know, there exists explicit, there is an explicit parameter evaluation of such things near the y equals 0 plane. Okay, and there is also an interesting point here. I don't know whether it will make more sense here. Is that in the case of the giant graviton, okay, the C4 was taken to be R2 minus 1. So it was a different gauge in which R2 minus 1 was taken, and that minus 1 actually took care of the energy of the compensating strip that you have to put outside in order to keep the area and so on. But generically, it's the local property of R2, it's the local property of the hole, which is more appropriate. Okay, maybe it makes sense. Okay, with all that, we can write down the Dirac Bonnefield part and the Jean-Simmons part. Okay, and so once again, you can look at the BPS conditions. Again, they can be simply read off just by demanding that H minus E by Tilda, as in the simpler case of a single Dirac graviton. And that amounts to these Dirac constraints. You can go through exactly the same procedure, and what you find is a simple first order action written in terms of the LLM coordinates. There is a one for H bar, which appears here, which is the same H bar as the LP2 power 4 that we had encountered before. Okay. So this is what the H bar is. And now let me just say that. So remember that the connected coordinate action for a single cell delta u, okay, had a kinetic term which was like this, and had a Hamiltonian term which is like that. And what we have to show, I mean, okay, so what happens is that so you take these various examples, like a single giant graviton, or a single dual giant graviton, or a single V3 band with the hole, a single V3 band with the filled region, in coupling to an arbitrary LLM geometry. Look at all these cases and see if this action, okay, after the appropriate subtraction of the U0 thing, it reproduces exactly this one. Okay? And so I have written an example here, which is a single cell, the delta U corresponding to single cell. It's a product of four theta functions, which says that this corresponds to a region with center x1 naught and x2 naught, and area, which is epsilon squared, which is which satisfies the property that it has area equal to 1. And then you compute this. So this one is very easy, okay, to show that this becomes exactly the Hamiltonian part of this brain action, okay, because you can simply take H out of this one because delta U is small, and that's, that just becomes R square. So that, that part is easy. This part has some subtlety. It involves products of delta function. It involves square of a delta function. So in the action, you need some regularization. Okay, so the Hamiltonian becomes that. That is indeed the Hamiltonian in all cases of the three lanes. And the kinetic term becomes that, okay, which has an additional factor A, okay, and that has delta functions of zeros. So delta 0 here in the x1 direction, delta 0 here in the x2 direction. Okay. Of course, delta function of 0 should be, you know, in any regular direction, it should be proportional to 1 over square root of 8 bar, that's for sure, because that was the scale of the theory. And but you have to take the proportionality constant here to the square root of pi by 3, which of course even doesn't have any great significance to me. So you might question this, but fortunately, if you look at the equation of motion coming from this action, okay, in that one, there is no such regularization that is needed. So I believe that there must be a way of doing this calculation in which regularization is not needed. So the equation of motion coming from the U action that we want to arrive at, okay, is this. Okay. Now, this one is much easier to evaluate. And you don't need such regularization there. And you can show indeed that this equation of motion is satisfied if the center of the cell satisfies the trajectory that comes from the D3 grain hypothesis.
Okay. Yes. So there was one thing that you mentioned that you know, once you make a hole there in the big droplet, then the area of the big droplet should increase a little bit.
Yes.
The droplet should increase by this one cell.
Yes.
So is there some ambiguity of how exactly, because once you start discussing arbitrary droplets, then there is potential ambiguity how you distribute
that's the
tiny area on the perimeter.
That's so. So the configuration actually is not given just by the hole, but also by the compensating strip.
Yes.
So it's given by actually two things. Okay, so U naught, let's say, is the configuration in which no perturbation can be made. And then this delta U, which is a hole or a particle, okay, that has to be specified with what other things you do to the rest of the
configuration.
Yes, indeed.
So then you are saying that this delta
that has been taken by the integrator. Yeah. Yeah. So, right. And, okay, so I'm getting past picking my 10 minutes of thing here. Okay, so let me just mention for you that. So we arrived at, therefore, the result that the U action, which we got for the collective coordinate action from the consideration of the W infinity motion, okay, that reproduces the D3 band parameters of U. And so now let me go to the Fermion side and see what's happening there. A set of n free fermions in a simple harmonic oscillator potential, okay, is of course given by this functional integral. And then it can be shown that this functional integral can be exactly converted, okay, in terms of the Wigner phase-based distribution which I have not written in this page, but it was given by, you know, the Fermion bilinear, okay, some particular intermediate resolution of the Fermion bilinear, okay, and that, so this function everything can be exactly written in terms of that, okay, which, whose action, okay, is pretty much the same as the action that we arrived at, except that it has star products, okay, and Moyle brackets instead of ordinary products and Poisson brackets. Okay. And the Moyle bracket is given as, you know, like, at here. Okay. I'm sorry, there's a division by A bar. So that's how Moyle bracket is derived. It becomes Poisson bracket in the A bar to 0 limit. And the star product also becomes ordinary product in the h bar to 0 limit. Okay. There is some substitute here as well. I can mention that drive it. If A has 1 over h bar kind of thing, then that limit is not so clear. But so generically, that's what we have. So what we arrive at. Okay, is some functional integral in which the action has star products based on ordinary products and Moyle brackets based by this. Furthermore, this the measure here of integration, which is with u, incorporates the constraints, which is u star u equals u, and the integral u of course is n. Okay. So the the collective, the measure of the collective block integral, okay, has u square equals u. So that also is the, you have to take the h bar to 0 limit. So that's the axiom. So the measure and the action obtained from supergravity that reproduces the h bar to 0 limit, so the Fermion of the measure and the action obtained from the major quantum mechanics. There are subtleties about finite h bar. So u star u equals u, okay, the solution of that, u square equal to u, okay, its solutions is, you know, various kinds of theta functions, the step function. On the other hand, u star equal u equal to u has solutions which is like u equals exponential of minus v squared plus u squared divided by a bar, things like that. Okay. That's the fuzzy thing. Okay. So it's a fuzzy droplet rather than a sharp droplet like this. And in case of a fuzzy droplet, it's easy to see that a single fuzzy droplet can split into two fuzzy droplets without a problem. Okay. On the other hand, for sharp droplets like this, if you want to construct, you know, sort of one parameter deformation of a sharp droplet, okay, you can't do it into two sharp droplets. You can't do it using the little W transformation. So, so perhaps allowing for singularities and all, you can do that. On the other hand, interestingly, this of course does not satisfy, okay, u equals 0 or 1. Clearly, you know, it has 0, okay, far away from the droplet. And in the middle of the droplet, it is 1 indeed. Okay. But it's like this. So it's like the Fermi Dirac distribution at a finite thing. So instead of that, it's like this. Okay. At h bar going to 0, this is like t going to 0 Fermi Dirac. So there, of course, you do have sharp things that are coming back. Okay, so and there's also this issue of you know, using, so how to characterize this entire space of LLM geometries okay, in terms of some one given particular group, because W infinity, the area specific Wickham optimism clearly doesn't seem to be the right thing, because it, the element configurations have all kinds of different number of dominants, okay, corresponding to various topologies as they have shown. And so clearly the group involved there is something different, okay. But on the other hand, it cannot be W infinity also, because solutions of this one, okay, they are not, I mean, the quantum W infinity is not a natural group, okay, to consider, okay, in for constraints like U square equals zero. You have to go to U star in there. Okay, so this may sound like a typical remarks. And there, of course, this interesting thing of what such configurations mean in terms of supergravity. Okay, this, clearly, if you just plug such U configurations into the LLM metric, it is singular. Okay, it is not regular anymore because of the what I said in the beginning. In the middle, in such places, indeed both spheres shrink to zero, where U has value like half or so on. And but perhaps quantum corrections, this finite age but things means some quantum corrections are there.
Yes. In principle, what you can do, you can represent, if you say that you expect to have to develop in the larger limit anyway.
Right.
So this approximation, you can approximate to arbitrary good accuracy by set of concentric circles.
No. Why? Even for concentric circles, the value of U will always be 0 or 1.
Yes.
Here the value of U itself is becoming of in an entire range from
saying that you can make a distribution of this concentric circles in such a way that there will be it will not be I can show you it is possible to make kind of spreading them up.
I see.
So putting the empty region between circles larger as you move further away in the placement.
Uh-huh.
And so in principle, there is a way to approximate. And the only problem is that the center, that's where you have to be working, because that will have a smaller circle.
So that's the limit. I see. To me, it seems that the best you can do using that sort of thing is, like that and so on. But maybe what you're saying is that
I can spread them off. So I don't have to have, if you wish, a uniform,
That is true. That is true.
And then I can, in doing these things, I can approximate to arbitrary basically.
Okay, I see. So you're saying that the density of such rings viewed from a large distance.
Yeah, in fact, in this way, you can precisely put it into a family distribution. Well, it's obvious. Not okay. Only that, but any distribution.
Right. Okay. Okay. Now the we showed that space time borders can be counted on commutative under previous conditions. Following the initial paper by Das, Jerick, and Mahmoud in the case of the giant diagram. That story happens to be true also for the arbitrary V3 day, and that can be taken over to the supergravity mode U. Okay, not only that, supergravity modes can become non-commutative. So normally you think that this supergravity functional integral is something like this. Okay, of course you have to take care of gauge invariants here, but here it seems in our case it seems to be rather different. Is that this functional integral itself gets split into degrees of freedom which are like borders, and this degrees of freedom which are like momenta. Okay. And in fact, the entire functional integral can be done in terms of Gelsitz. Okay. Of course, that's because of the BPS conditions and some insertion here of some kind of a projection operator for BPS or something that will do that. So it's not clear to me how that is actually happening, but clearly it is happening. And the non-commutative action and the measure of such things, it agrees with the equal zero limit of free convergence from a possible differential. That of course is expected, but we can arrive at this thing starting from supergravity and without using the boundary theory arrive at that. And collective coordinate okay, so this would be a of course this study should be completed. Okay, how to do collective coordinate method subject to BPS constraint. And one can imagine using such things to the counting of supergravity configurations, staying within supergravity. Okay, one can have such phase structure, and that can count. That can lead to counting of bi-dimensional of black hole configurations in particular. Perhaps counts the configurations that Marshall has suggested, and various other configurations, because this can lead to counting. And another interesting thing is, so BPS is giving you this exact phase space structure. But suppose you put in a little bit of near extremal. You go a little bit of near extremal thing. So we know in case of the T1D5 black hole that these enoughs are sparked by some something that Vapa said in this topological field theory conference in Fields Institute, that the original counting of the original partition function calculation of the D1D5 black hole was actually an index calculation. Okay. So he said most probably, most likely. That of course is not clear to me, but if one can somehow show that the projection operator involved in enforcing a BPS condition is actually actually an operator related to some minus one or F kind of thing, then it can very well happen so. But more interestingly, in the D1D5 case, it's not only just the extremal black hole configuration, but also the near extremal black hole configurations, okay, which used that counting, and if it is possible to extend this sort of non-commutative structure beyond external by looking at near externality, so perhaps one can take a trial model of something like Chernozemov plus Young-Mills, in which this one dominates in some region of the configuration space, and of course the finite H bar may have many things to say. As I said, for C equals 1 for many years, I didn't know what to do with this difference between the two W infinities, and it showed up rather, may not be completely unexpectedly, but it showed up as a B0 plane. Thank you.
So, do we have some more questions?
Yes.
I guess, do you have any comments doing ABS file process 5? We know there are no alpha prime corrections. But in this, is there some argument that can be said? You would expect alpha prime corrections to be scattered here separately.
Yeah, okay. So,
that's related to something you mentioned, but we didn't get back to it. Is there how, since we need to be careful when we start looking at central giant gravity?
Right. So it it appears that if you take the ABS 5 process 5 U configuration, okay, so that depends only on R and not on phi. So the difference between the, so this is some argument which I think Imani and I discussed. So these, you remember the star product has things like exponential.